Hello, everyone, and welcome back to History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody, and welcome back to our series on John F. Kennedy. I realized last week I just kind of went into it, and it was a shorter episode. I mean, getting back into this has just been a little tough. I have so much information, like, for this series that, like, I just wanted to get right to it last week, and I didn't even realize, I didn't even, like, pour anything to drink. I don't know. But, like, I haven't really been drinking as much in the new year. When we went back to school in January, I took 2 whole weeks off of drinking. I started eating healthier and working out again and kind of just getting cleaned up. So I really haven't been, you know, like, drinking much. And then I realized last week, I just kind of went into it and kind of just, here's the information. This is what we're talking about. But I hope everyone had a great new year. This is our second episode back. And, you know, it's February and it's snowing up here in Illinois. It's cold. We're ready for spring, some warmer weather. Oh, I can't wait. But I am having a beer tonight because the Four Nations Faceoff is on. Those of you listening, if you're not a hockey fan, you probably don't even know what that is. But during the NHL 2-week break here, we have the USA, Canada, Finland, and Sweden playing in a international tournament. It's pretty awesome if you're a hockey fan. I'm having a Mickey Light right now, a Michelob Ultra. And that kind of goes with the trend of I haven't been drinking much and I'm not packing myself full of carbs and beer. So that's just kind of what I'm drinking. I hope you guys have a drink in hand. You're ready to go for this episode because we are going to talk about John F. Kennedy's policies abroad today. So his foreign policy. And there's a lot of information here to kind of collect. And I want you just to keep in mind, I'm trying to build towards like the end of this series, which is like the assassination episode. Because like I said in the last episode, we're going to go back and kind of reanalyze the conspiracy theories that have kind of developed over the last 60 plus years now. And I'm kind of in between a couple of what I think, and we'll get there. But this is all information to keep in mind as we're getting to that kind of assassination conspiracy theory. I don't even want to call it a conspiracy theory because I feel like there's a lot of information here in which like there's just missing pieces. And it's not even like a conspiracy. It's just asking historical questions about what really happened to JFK. And if it was just a murder and an assassination by Lee Harvey Oswald, that's fine. I would totally accept it if that was the God-honest truth. But again, just looking at all this information that just keep, you know, you keep collecting, and you're like, things aren't right. There's just something here that's not right. Also, for those of you missing Audrey, she's just been really busy, and so that's why I'm doing the podcast solo right now. But I promise you, I will get her back on here. So don't worry. So let's get into it. Here we go.
So many members of the United States government indicates our great interest, our profound attachment to the great effort which the people of Africa are making in working towards political freedom and also working towards a better life for their people. We also are a revolutionary country and a revolutionary people. And therefore, though many thousands of miles of space may separate our continent from the continent of Africa, today we feel extremely close.
John F. Kennedy had a vision for a world of peace and for those countries who had suffered from a history of colonization and poor development to gain their independence and prosper. However, when a United States president has this type of goal, those with special interests abroad start to raise an eyebrow at the threat to their ever-growing wealth.
I think that the preoccupation of the United States with the cause of freedom, not only here but around the world, has been one of the most important facets of our national life. All of our early revolutionary leaders, I think, echoed the words of Thomas Jefferson that the disease of liberty is catching. And some of you may remember an exchange between Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Paine. Benjamin Franklin said, "Where freedom lives, there is my home." And Thomas Paine said, "Where freedom is not, there is my home."
Big business, private interest groups, and even those within the United States government opposed Kennedy's policies with a fear those interests would perish. A few specific parts of the world Kennedy had a focus on was Africa and Latin America. Over 60 years after his assassination, these continue to be some of the most unstable countries in the world. Could things have been different if Kennedy would have lived?
I think all of us who believe in freedom feel a sense of community with all those who are free. But I think we also feel an even stronger sense of community with those who are not free, but who someday will be free.
On June 30th of 1960, the Congo had gained its independence from Belgium, its European colonizer. In this exchange in power, two prominent figures arose as the country's leaders. Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba, who opposed imperialists in the Congo, and President Joseph Kasavubu, who was the preferred leader by the Belgians. Now, although Belgium had granted independence to the Congo, the transfer of power is not very genuine because of the existing resources and private interests in the region. The Belgian military would not completely leave the area, leading to a revolt by the Congolese people. The United Nations would then get involved and demand that Belgium leave the Congo for good. Patrice Lumumba was upset that the United States would not intervene with the Belgian government and turned to the Soviet Union for assistance. Now remember, these nations aren't necessarily interested in East versus West, communism, and, you know, free democracies. They are looking for aid and autonomy. In the United States, this act by Lumumba was viewed as him being a, quote, communist sympathizer, end quote. Not the side you want to be on. Before Kennedy had won the 1960 election and was still a Massachusetts senator, the Eisenhower administration, specifically the National Security Council, had called for the assassination of Lumumba, deeming him a communist threat. The acting CIA station chief in the Congo at the time was an agent named Alan Dulles. Now remember this name if you haven't heard it before in the realm of the JFK assassination. This is going to be important when we get to it. Kennedy, very keen on the situation, having been an ambassador to African countries, sends diplomat Averill Harriman to talk with Lumumba about his motives. Now, Lumumba reiterates that he, in fact, was asking for aid that was denied by the United States government, and he simply reached out to the Soviet Union for financial help. He again stated that he was not choosing between communism and Western democracy, but simply trying to get the aid he needed for the people of Congo. After Harriman reports his conversation with Lumumba to JFK, JFK takes an unpopular perspective on Lumumba, stating that he is not a communist, just a leader trying to liberate his people from European imperialism. Now, here is where things start to heat up. President Joseph Kasavubu calls for the dismissal of Prime Minister Lumumba. However, the House and Senate of the Congolese government vote to reinstate Lumumba. At the same time, we have a guy named Colonel Mobutu of the Congolese military who announces a temporary military takeover. Mobutu is backed by the American CIA and station chief Alan Dulles. He stands strong by the belief that Lumumba needs to be, quote, eliminated, end quote. Now, Kennedy, playing by his ethics and beliefs, has a goal to stabilize the constitutional government for the people in the Congo. However, Alan Dulles' main focus is the resources in this region. Lumumba would end up being assassinated on January 17th of 1961, just 3 days before Kennedy's inauguration. JFK wouldn't find out about the assassination until a month after he took the presidency. Another sketchy bit of this story is that the lead general of the United Nations, General Hammarskjöld, he died in a plane crash later in September of 1961, which shows some evidence of a potential assassination as well. Now, I'm not one for coincidences, but things are kind of happening too close to each other of people who are involved in the same situation. The Congo incident shows how JFK stood up for what was right and just for the Congolese people. It was an act of national unity against a colonial power trying to separate the region and gain access to the only resources the people had available to run an economy.
Washington wrote the address in 1796 in order to eliminate himself as a candidate for a third term, but most importantly to give some guidance to our new republic. His text and his speech is alive with the spirit of liberty. It speaks of the union of states, a union of states, as a political fortress against the batteries of internal and external enemies. It counsels adopting hasty improvisations at the expense of principles, which thus might undermine what cannot be directly overthrown.
JFK and America were praised by Africa, but after Kennedy's assassination, President Lyndon B. Johnson abandoned efforts in Africa, leaving it once again vulnerable and in shambles. To make matters worse, the Congo would fall into a military dictatorship under, once said, General Mobutu. Now, African countries in general had high praise for then-Senator Kennedy, and his election for the presidency was just as important for the people of Africa as it was for America. Prior to Kennedy's presidency, President Dwight Eisenhower took a pro-colonist approach to his dealings in Africa. JFK changed that narrative by being pro-Africa. Kennedy had a four-step approach to his strategy in Africa. First was to build good relationships with African nationalist leaders. Second, increase aid and economic programs to assist these nations. Third, he would accept that African countries would not side with communists or Western democracy. And lastly, a strong opposition to European colonization. Kennedy also sent ambassadors to every independent African nation. To compare his efforts, the previous Eisenhower administration only had four ambassadors in Africa. One thing that made Kennedy stand out is that he tried to get along with leaders that weren't aligned with American political views. For example, he supported a specific dam project in Ghana, which had a communist leader at the time. Even though he faced immense pressure from within the American government to end the project, Kennedy gained the support of the president of Senegal and would not abandon his policies in Africa due to this political pressure. In fact, Ghana's president, Kwame Nkrumah, actually idolized Kennedy and was impressed with his civil rights views. In exchange for assistance with the dam project, Ghana would not let the Soviet Union use its airfields during the Cuban Missile Crisis, a huge win for the Americans. Other countries such as Senegal and Guinea would follow suit and block the Soviets out of their countries as well. After Kennedy's assassination, the leaders of Ghana reviewed the Warren Report, that report that highlights the whole Kennedy assassination, right? It went through the government, and like this was their final say of what happened that day. And they noticed something. CIA agent Alan Dulles was a part of the investigation in which they referred to that finding to be, quote, whitewash, end quote. So African leaders knew of Dulles and how corrupt he was, and this was a huge red flag to them. Kennedy never spoke out directly against European colonization in Africa. However, he did cut things like funding and arms deals with countries like Portugal, who would not grant independence to their colonies. In Washington, people in high places couldn't understand how Kennedy could care so much about Africa, calling them, quote, jungle people, end quote, over the highly advanced European society. Another name to remember is Dean Acheson, former Secretary of State during World War II in the Truman administration, who also expressed his disdain for Kennedy's focus on Africa. Leaders in Africa, specifically the president of Algeria, stated that Kennedy was a, quote, prisoner to a system, end quote, of American political pressure and corruption. In respect to African opinion, many believe that Kennedy's assassination ultimately came down to his support for African nationalism and his fight for civil rights in America. Now, that's just speculation from one point of view, but a really good thing to keep in the back of your mind as we get closer and closer to talking about kind of those theories behind the assassination. After Kennedy's death, LBJ cut 29% of aid to Africa and only would provide it to 10 countries. Kennedy had been sending aid to 27 independent African nations.
We look to the future with the greatest degree of confidence and hope. And I hope that the people of your continent recognize that we wish to be associated intimately with them, that we wish for them the same things we wish for ourselves: peace, the opportunity to develop our own institutions in our own way, to be independent, not only politically, but in all of the other kinds of independence which make up important national security. Your brightest days are still ahead. I believe ours are also. And I hope when the history of these times are written, when the history of the decade of the 60s will be written, they will record a more intimate and closer attachment year by year between your countries of Africa and this country of the United States.
Not only was Africa a focus of Kennedy's, but he was highly concerned with Latin America as well. He believed in working toward self-sufficient and independent countries in this region of the world. Many in Washington took a pro-imperialism approach to dealing with Latin American countries to prevent communism. In other words, getting directly involved and setting up American-backed democracies. Right? Having full control. Well, that's the only way we can keep communism away, I guess. However, JFK had a different approach. Economic strength. He created what's called the Alliance for Progress, which was an economic and social reform program to assist with development of these countries.
And I'm particularly glad that it emphasizes the not only opportunity for all Americans, the chance to develop their talents, education for boys and girls so that they can pursue those talents to the very end of their ability, but also because you remind Americans of the very important links that we have with our sister republics in this hemisphere.
This would allow for people to have equal access to land, jobs, and education. What a concept. There were many goals of the Alliance for Progress, including things such as increasing levels of income to achieve sustainability, make economic benefits available to all people no matter the social class, and raising the levels of agricultural output and productivity.
One of the things which I have taken the greatest interest has been in attempting to pursue an example which was long neglected, and that was the one set by President Franklin Roosevelt to emphasize that the United States is not only good neighbors, which we were in the 30s, but also friends and associates in a great effort to build in this hemisphere an alliance for progress, an effort to prove that in this hemisphere, from top to bottom, in all of the countries, whether they be Latin or North American, that there is a common commitment to freedom, to equality of opportunity, to a chance for all, to prove that prosperity can be the handmaiden of freedom, and to show to the world a very bright star here in this country, and indeed in the entire hemisphere.
Education was also on the forefront of many of these goals. But, as we know, some governments don't want their people to be educated. These goals and progress would benefit the people of Latin America rather than what former presidents had done, which was benefiting the oligarchy and the wealthy in Latin America. This plan, most importantly, didn't benefit American big business, which had many interests and projects ongoing in this region of the world. After Kennedy's death, LBJ funded military governments in Latin America, which would lead back to oppression and poverty. In Latin America, there would be many governments overthrown with the help of big business and the American CIA. Specifically, the overthrow of the government in the Dominican Republic led former President Bosch to realize Kennedy was the only U.S. president to ever try to revitalize the image of the United States in this part of the world and overturn any wrongdoings that had been done by prior administrations. So, was Kennedy embarrassing those private administrations who already had all these interests built in Latin America? Something to think about. Through these examples, we can see how JFK started to make many enemies of the rich and powerful, especially within his own country. When a leader starts to focus on the common people, those who start to lose power and returns off their investments start to panic, and their main goal is usually to oust that person from power. A question to consider is, did any of Kennedy's foreign policies contribute to his assassination or any conspiracy to assassinate the sitting president? Now, what I've just told you is just a few examples of African policy and Latin American policy. But these are really important events that JFK dealt with firsthand that, again, to reiterate, shows that he might have gotten in the way of very powerful people, especially within the American government. And I know the assassination, a lot of people think the CIA did it. They were the ones who actually assassinated Kennedy. But I don't think that's necessarily true. as we get there, I think the CIA's, they're involved and they covered a lot of things up or put plans in action. But I think there's more to this and more groups or another group behind the actual assassination. So this is JFK's foreign policy. And it's definitely something to take into these future episodes as we get closer to talking about the assassination theories. In our next episode, we're going to look at JFK's domestic policies, including the economy, his approach to dealing with Wall Street, and his push for civil rights in the United States. Now, these are very important points, especially within American government, because these are policies that his brother Robert would still push on after John F. Kennedy's death. We'll also take a look at, was Robert Kennedy's assassination 5 years later also a result of carrying on his brother's legacy? Something to think about. Now, I know these episodes are a lot shorter, right? But sometimes shorter is better. We have a lot of information to unpack, like in this whole series. You know, last time we just talked about JFK's ideas, political ideas, economic ideas, right? His beliefs, values. This part, we're just talking about some foreign policy. Next time, we're going to talk about JFK at home. Then we're going to talk about some other important events and aspects that occurred during his presidency that kind of lead up to the assassination. We're going to kind of dissect and pick apart all these kind of things to just, you know, ask some questions and, you know, try and find some answers. That's what this is all about. Thanks again for joining us on the History on the Rocks podcast. We will see you next week with a brand new episode. Go see some friends, some family this weekend. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Get some drinks in. Cheers.